Welcome to This Month in Muscular Dystrophy. I'm Kevin Flanagan from the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. Each month on this podcast, we invite authors of recent publications to discuss how their work improves our understanding of inherited neuromuscular diseases and what their work might mean for the treatment of these diseases. It's my great pleasure to have as our guest today Dr. Anamika Artsmaroos, leader of the DMD Genetic Therapy Group and associate professor in the Department of Human Genetics at Leiden University Medical Center in the Netherlands. Anamika, welcome.
Thank you.
Today we'll talk about your work, but also refer patients to a recent review article that you've published in the European Journal of Human Genetics that our readers can access from the link on our website regarding progress in therapeutic antisense applications for neuromuscular disorders. So maybe we could start by just talking a little bit about what antisense therapies are and what antisense oligonucleotides are.
Well, antisense oligonucleotides are small pieces of modified RNA or DNA that can specifically bind to RNA. And RNA is a temporary copy of a gene. So genes encode protein information, and before protein is made, first a temporary RNA copy is made, and the antisense oligos bind to those RNA copies.
So RNA, in a way, is sort of like a blueprint for the final protein, I guess.
So yeah, the way I usually explain is that the DNA is the book, which is in the library, which you cannot take out, but if you want to have the text anyway, you make a copy and you take that out, and then you make the recipe or whatever it is at home.
Ah, that's terrific. That's a great analogy. So antisense oligos bind to that temporary copy, the RNA, and they somehow affect it.
Is that right? Yes.
Now, some of our listeners will know there are many types of antisense oligos, and some listeners know about different kinds of modifications. What in general are these, and how are they important?
So there's different modifications, and that also has to do with what you want to achieve with the antisense oligos. There's antisense oligos that can cause the RNA copy to be destroyed. So you have you need specific chemical modifications to achieve that. The antisense oligo I'm mainly using have a different modification, and so the RNA is not destroyed, but it's modified, and it's manipulated. So for instance, if you want to do exon skipping, the therapy I'm working on, then you influence the splicing process. And what splicing is that genes contain the protein information, but the protein information is not all lined up together, but it's dispersed over the gene in exons. So before the RNA is translated into a protein, first the exons have to be joined together. And what you want to do with exon skipping is make the cell pass over one exon or to skip one exon. So the antisense oligo binds to that exon, hides it from the machinery that does the splicing, and then the exon is skipped.
So it's not recognized as an exon in that
exactly.
Assembly process, right? And I know in your review article you mentioned, and some of the readers may look at it, there's other therapeutic uses of antisense oligos. I know they use different chemistries, don't they? But for antiviral therapies, for example. In that case, they bind, as you mentioned, to destroy the RNA, for example, a viral RNA, to keep it from replicating. But this splicing effect you mentioned, and exon skipping, of course, is the therapy that's now reaching trials. That's really in Duchenne muscular dystrophy where it's at the point of trials at this point.
Yes, that's correct. And it probably the major application is in Duchenne muscular dystrophy, because there you skip an exon to restore the genetic code. So in Duchenne, the dystrophin gene has mutations which disrupt the genetic code. And we know that if we could restore the genetic code, that will lead to a milder disease, Becker muscular dystrophy, because we know that Becker patients have mutations in the same gene that do not disrupt the genetic code.
I'm going to take just a minute here to refer our listeners to the link from our website to your website, because I know at your website you have a lot of information for parents and families anyone interested on the details of how this works, how skipping works and how it might be applied. And I think some nice examples of how that genetic code gets restored.
Yeah, so it has an explanation in lay terms with pictures, step by step, what the rationale is of the exon skipping approach, how it works, where we are now, and what we still need to do.
So among the many long contributions of you and your group, one of the interesting things I think for studying this is how you made what's called a humanized mouse, a humanized DMD mouse. Could you describe what that is and how it's a tool for your studies?
So the thing with exon skipping is that the antisense oligos bind specifically. They recognize a specific part of the RNA. And if we want to test that in a mouse, then the problem is that the mouse and a human target are slightly different. So the oligos, the antisense oligos we develop for the human situation won't work in mouse. And we could develop oligos for mouse, but they won't work in patients. So we have a mouse that has the complete human DMD gene. And in that mouse, we can test the human oligos in a mouse model. And when you develop a therapy after cell models, you'll have to test it also in animal models. So it's a very valuable tool to show that the oligos you developed for humans work in an animal model, in muscle of an animal.
So that's really a key tool to moving things from the test tube or the culture plate into human trials. And human trials are going on now. Maybe you could just mention about some of the work, the human trial work so far.
So there's been four human trials completed. Two have been done by Prosenza, which uses a certain chemistry. It's called 2-O-methylphosphothioate, or briefly 2-O-methyl. There's another company developing antisense oligos. They use morpholino oligos, and both have done a first clinical trial where they inject the antisense oligos locally into the muscle. And what they see is that in the location where they injected the antisense oligos, that the dystrophin is recovered. And recently they've also done that systemically, so either in the bloodstream or subcutaneous. And there they also see dystrophin restoration.
It's quite promising work. And as an aside, we're actually here in Columbus, as you know, doing some trials with exon skipping here, and North American trials. And we'll refer to any listeners who might be interested to our clinical trials website and the Center for Gene Therapy if they'd like to contact us about that. Well, let's talk about another disease you mentioned in your review, spinal muscular atrophy. And the strategy is a little bit different here. Maybe you could tell us what's going on there, what's happening.
So what's happening in spinal muscular atrophy is that an exon is skipped. And because that exon is skipped, the genetic code is disrupted. So there's not really any protein being made. So what we're trying to do, or what the researchers are trying to do here with antisense oligos, is to make the cell, the splicing machinery, recognize that exon again. So it's included. So the exon is there, only it's not recognized due to a mutation. And by using antisense oligos, the cell recognizes the exon again, and it is included. So then the protein can be produced.
So it's sort of the reverse issue of exon skipping for
DMD. Yeah, it's exactly the reverse.
And in your review, you mentioned yet another common type of muscular dystrophy, myotonic dystrophy. This is due to a different kind of mutation, where there's an expansion of the repeat in the non-coding portion of this temporary copy, what we call the untranslated region. So this is a different sort of mutation. What's the strategy here for antisense therapy?
So first, I'd like to give some more background before I explain what the antisense oligos do. So there's a repeat, and what that repeat does, it sequesters certain proteins that help with the splicing. And because these proteins are sequestered, the splicing of a lot of protein is altered, and that's what causes the disease. So with antisense oligos, there's two routes you could take. You could try to restore the splicing, but that would mean you would have to restore it for each and every gene by itself. So it is a possibility, but it's a bit complicated. What you can also do is go one step before and try to disrupt these expanded repeats or bind these expanded repeats so they cannot sequester these proteins that are involved in the splicing process. And so then these proteins become available again and the normal splicing is restored.
So it's quite interesting. I was just thinking as you were talking that you and your group have really played such a central role in developing this route of therapies, and it's moved now into where this route of therapeutics really has a possibility for affecting many different diseases, and they're all reaching the point, I think, of where we're getting close to clinical trials, or we're in clinical trials. Maybe if we could return to DMD for a moment, what do you think are challenges to this type of therapy? What are the risks of this type of therapy, and how are they being addressed?
So the first challenge is that the DMD is a chronic disease, and the antisense oligos, they don't stick around forever, so repeated treatment will be necessary. And what we don't know is whether we can do long-term treatment with these antisense oligos. They're a new type of drugs. They are tested in thousands of patients already, but usually for acute diseases like cancer or immune diseases. So we know that they're safe for up to a year, but we don't know when we're looking at DMD patients, we're looking at lifelong treatment. So we don't know whether whether that's safe or not. And of course, we hope it is safe, but we simply don't know because it has never been tested. Another challenge is that it's a mutation-specific approach for DMD. So different patients have different mutations. That means that they need the skip of a different exon to restore the genetic code. And each antisense oligo is now considered by the regulatory agencies as a new type of drug. So they should each have to go through all the phases of clinical development. So that would be very expensive, but it would also be very difficult because the antisense oligos that are now in development are in clinical trials target exon 51, and that's an oligo that could help about 13% of all patients. So there it's feasible to do larger clinical trials. But for other antisense oligos targeting exons that apply to only 1% of patients, it will already be difficult to do a trial in 100 patients simply because there's not that many patients in the world. So we have a dialogue ongoing with the European and the American regulatory agencies to see how we can deal with this problem. Because what we want is, of course, to develop as many oligos as possible to help as many patients as possible.
What are your next steps in your laboratory or in general in the field in moving these therapies forward?
So in my lab, what we're trying to do is to optimize this approach further and to compare different doses and different regimes. How can we optimize it? But I think the first or the most important step now will be a placebo-controlled trial with the exon 51 oligo. Because so far the results are very promising. We see dystrophin restoration. But what we will need to do is to show that there's also a functional benefit for the patient so that either the disease progression slows down or perhaps even gets better. But also that the treatment is safe, because DMD is a very complicated disease. There's many different symptoms, and therefore you need a placebo group to compare the side effects, because there will be symptoms in both groups. There will be new symptoms, and it might be because of the treatment with the oligo, but it might also be new manifestations of the disease. So before we can conclude that the approach is safe, we need to do a placebo-controlled trial. Before we can conclude that the therapy is effective, we need a placebo-controlled trial to really see that the patients that are treated with the drug and get the dystrophin restoration, that they do better than the ones that do not receive the drug.
Well, thank you for your thoughts, and thanks for taking time to share them with us on the podcast today.
My pleasure.
I'll just refer our listeners once again to our website, where you can link to Dr. Artsma Roos's review article, and also there's a link to her webpage there with many more resources for anyone who's interested. This podcast is brought to you by Nationwide Children's Hospital. You can find out more about the muscular dystrophy program and ongoing clinical trials here at Nationwide Children's at our website, nationwidechildrens.org/muscular-dystrophy-podcast. And again, you'll find a link to the abstract and article of the study we discussed today. Thanks for joining us, and please join us again for our next podcast.